There's no, not even the idea that, well, these are my friends and maybe I shouldn't be too attached to them materialistically. But he considers friends as useless as a dry, overgrown well. And his household becomes like a thorn-filled forest. Heavy blood. I don't know how that got. Well, maybe it's to do with food. Food becomes totally distasteful. Praise from other devotees is like the biting of a snake. Extreme humility. Daily duties become difficult to perform, like death. All the limbs of his body become like an unmanageable burden. The consolation of his comrades is like poison. Even though he remains constantly awake, wakefulness is an ocean of repentance. And sleep seems to flee his body. In other words, he can't sleep. His body seems the target of chastisement for the Lord. His life ears become as lifeless as roasted grains. What he previously took as his life's goal is abandoned as a great calamity. Even thinking of the Lord tears his body asunder. Then Prema, assuming the form of a magnet, attracts Black Krishna and makes him appear to the devotee for a moment. At that time, all the senses of the devotee, eyes, nose, ears, tongue, sense of touch, become the receptacles of Krishna. His beauty, fragrance, melody, youthfulness, tastiness, opulence, and mercy. From tasting the extreme sweetness and ever freshness of these qualities, a great longing, which at every moment increases, is born of the devotee because of his prema. Poetic words are not adequate to describe the ocean of transcendental bliss which appears at this time. In the next paragraph, he actually tries to do what he has just said in this very sentence we just read is not possible to do. He tries to do it in order to show that it can't be done. A traveler on a dusty path, burned by the sun's rays during the hot season, finds shelter in a cool place supplied with 100 vessels of ice-cold water from a divine pool, under the shade of a vast banyan tree densely tangled with branches. An elephant caught in a forest fire without escape is finally bathed by unlimited water from a bank of rain clouds. So, none of these things are actually comparisons. They're not proper comparisons at all. And I think on the next page, anyway, no, let's just stay on this page. But this is the idea. These things may sound like very extraordinary, wonderful things, but there's no comparison. They're not drawing any type of fit comparison at all. So then, the Lord reveals first his beauty to the eyes of the devotee in this remarkable condition. On account of the sweetness of that beauty, all the senses, the ears, the tongue, the nose, the skin, and the mind, take on the quality of eyes. And obstacles such as paralysis, shaking, and tears are generated. From this, the devotee swoons in bliss. To console the devotee, the Lord next reveals his fragrance to the nostrils of the devotee, and all the devotee's senses take on the quality of the nose, smelling through his eyes and ears and skin. Again, the devotee swoons in bliss. The Lord then reveals his sonorous voice to the devotee's ears. O my devotee, I'm under your control. Don't be overwhelmed, but fully satisfy your desire by relishing me. All the senses become like ears to hear. And for the third time, the devotee faints. At the beginning of this faint, the Lord then mercifully gives the touch of his lotus feet, his hands and his breast to the devotee, and reveals his fresh youthfulness to the devotee. To those in the mood of servitude, he bestows his lotus feet on their heads. To those in the mood of friendship, he grasps their hands with his. To those in the mood of parental affection, he wipes away their tears with his own hand. For those in conjugal mood, he rewards them with his embrace, touching them with his hands and chest. Then all the devotee's senses take on the sense of touch, and the devotee faints for a fourth time in a deep swoon. So So, at the start of the swoon, the Lord then restores him by giving him the taste of his own lips. But this is only for those in conjugal rasa. And then the devotee's senses, at least if they're in the conjugal rasa, take on the sense of taste. And the devotee faints for a fifth time. This blissful swoon is so deep that the Lord can only revive him by giving his generosity. This Odharya generosity refers to the state in which simultaneously all of the Lord's qualities suddenly manifest themselves to the devotee's various senses. So as he said about Bhava, what can you say? What can you say? So let's turn over to page 25 and we will go down about, what is it, 1, 2, 3, 4, the fifth paragraph. Attaining the power. Attaining the power to taste completely the beauty, fragrance, etc. of the Lord, and tasting each one, the devotee ascends to higher and higher peaks of astonishing experience. His heart melts on incessant realization of the Lord's unheard of bhakta-vatsalya. There's so much we could read, we didn't read. That this quality of bhakta-vatsalya, the Lord, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 18, I think verse 26 to 29, lists out many, many qualities of the Lord, such as he's truthful, clean, merciful, and so many things. But this one quality of being bhakta-vatsalya, you know what that means? Affectionate to his devotees. On the level of prema, This overwhelms all his other qualities. The Lord, displaying his wonderful nature, says to the devotee, O best of devotees, many births you have given up, wife, house, and wealth for the sake of my service. You endured the miseries of cold, wind, hunger, thirst, and pain, tolerated the contempt of other men, taking to a life of begging. In payment for all your sacrifice, I cannot give you anything. I have become your debtor. Since lordship over the whole earth and the post of a demigod, all mystic powers are unsuitable for you, because you are transcendental for all these rather unimportant things. So how can I give them to you? One cannot give grass and straw, the enjoyment of cows, to a spiritual personality such as you. Though I am unconquerable, today I have been conquered by you. I am taking shelter of the creeper of your gentleness. This is the Lord expressing himself to the devotee on the level of prema. Then the next paragraph is the devotee replying very humbly and very nicely. Let's turn over to page 26. Well, this is what I was referring to regarding comparisons. The third line down, previously. Previously, I compared your dark limbs to the monsoon cloud, to the blue water lily, and to the sapphire. Now, they're very nice things. And I compared your limbs to those things. I compared your effulgent face to the moon, and your tender feet to newly sprouted leaves. Now, these analogies seem like a pile of burnt mustard seeds compared to a golden mountain, or like a chickpea in comparison to a touchstone, like a jackal in comparison to a lion, or a mosquito in comparison to Garuda. By my poor intelligence, I've clearly committed offense to you by comparing you to these things, although actually they seem like quite nice things. So then, next paragraph. In this way, the devotee praises the Lord, and the Lord becomes more pleased with the devotee. Then the Lord reveals all the favorable things necessary for the devotee's particular relation to the Lord, imbued with excellent rasa. Sri Vrindavan, the desire tree, the Mahayoga peat, the most dear daughter of Vrishabhanu, Srimati Radharani, in other words, her associates such as Lalita and her manjaris, his own friends such as Subal, and so on. Next paragraph. recovering consciousness after some moments, because the devotee's gone into a trance. The devotee, anxious to see the Lord again, because the devotee just disappeared, opens his eyes, but not seeing the Lord, he begins crying. Was I merely dreaming? No, I wasn't dreaming, because I'm not feeling drowsy. Nor is there any, like you get this stuff in your eyes after you've been sleeping. Was I hallucinating? No, because a hallucination could never give real bliss. So in these ways, he's just wondering, what happened? Because it's so inconceivable. Then down to the bottom of the page, he begins to roll on the ground, breathe heavily, faint, and lose his mind. But then, suddenly seeing the Lord everywhere, he rejoices, embraces, laughs, dances and sings. But when the Lord disappears again, he becomes filled with remorse and weeps. Behaving in this way, he withdraws his very life symptoms and loses awareness of whether he has a body or not. Then, not aware that his material body has passed to the elements, left his body, he understands only that his desired Lord, the ocean of mercy, has manifested himself. So the Lord, engaging the devotee in his service, he is leading him to his own house. So the Lord has come and is leading him back to Godhead. Thus the devotee reaches the goal of life. Adoshadatta saru sangatava janakriya tatonatana vrijisyatta son tatonishtarachistata atasaktistato bhavas tata prema vidanchati. First appears faith, then association with devotees, devotional activities, clearing of obstacles, steadiness, taste, attachment, bhava, and finally prema. So, congratulations, devotees. You just reached the goal in theory. So now make it practical. Apply all these things. I'm sure there are many things that you can apply from all this. Just one little further point. I mean, not little, but we'll just mention it briefly because we have a little time. So the stages, next paragraph, the stages of devotion mentioned in this verse have been described as they are. Now, some higher stages. Sneha, man, there should be a comma after man, pranaya, rag, anurag, and mahabhav. Successively specialized tastes are progressively higher fruits. Can you imagine? Going higher than what we've just described. Because the material body of the devotee cannot tolerate the friction of extremes of all those tastes, these higher tastes, they're not manifested within material bodies. Thus, these tastes have not been described here. Ruchi, Asakti, Bhava, and Prema, which can be experienced within these bodies, have already been described. So there's one story, account of Raghunath Das Goswami. He was asked by Rupa Goswami to edit Lalita Madhava, which is a drama, lengthy drama in Sri Rupa Goswami's. And the beginning of it is that Krishna leaves Vrindavan. So it's a very long story and very involved, back and forward, and very astonishing. But Krishna leaves Vrindavan, and then all the inhabitants of Vrindavan just become overwhelmed by separation. So some of them leave their bodies. Some of them leave their bodies. And one of them is Srimati Radharani. So Raghunath Das is editing this book and he is going through these parts. And he became overwhelmed. He was living at Radhakund. He became overwhelmed. And the ecstatic symptoms and separation were so powerful, devastating, that it appeared to the devotees that his body was going to basically disintegrate, be torn to pieces by the extremes of the emotional manifestations within his body. But they couldn't do anything. They couldn't do anything. So they went to Rupa Goswami and asked him, can you take that book away? Can you do something? But Rupa Goswami said, no, he won't let me take the book away. They tried to take the book away, but he wouldn't let them. Because he said, this has been given to me by my spiritual master as a service. Because Rupa Goswami is a spiritual master. So then Rupa Goswami thought, right, I know what I'll do. So he wrote a book, Dan Kali Komudi, which is all about how Radha and Krishna meet after separation. So then he went to Raghunath Das and told him, you know, there's some things in this Lalita Madhava I want to change. So, but I've got this other book here. So will you edit this other book and let me take back Lalita Madhava and do what I want on that? So of course, Raghunath Das was ready to do that. So then he got Dan Kali Komudi, and he read about how Radha and Krishna were united again, and he became very happy. And this way his life was saved, actually. So, these higher stages, because of course he's on higher stage, these higher stages cannot be tolerated by the material body. They're only manifest in people who are resident, or people who have spiritual bodies, at least, put it that way. So, all right. Any comments or questions?
Full name of the Dan Kali?
Komudi. If I remember correctly, I'll have to. K-A-U-M-U-D-I.
Maharaj, the devotee is on the level of prem, his attachment for Krishna is so intense. What is his association with other Vaishnavas? He's so focused on Krishna, how does he relate to other Vaishnavas?
You see, on the level of prema means a heightened condition of bhava. And one of the vibhavas is the devotees. Yeah. So, you know, it depends on him as a person. But it's not that in principle a person on the level of prema could be expected to be unable to relate with the devotees. Depending on how he's sort of in prema, in what way. Like Talpa, he was very easily able to relate with the devotees. And some of us, like, say, Rupa Goswami and the six Goswamis, they were also, you know, their moods would change, but they would generally at least associate together and be very happy together. That's why they're known as the six Goswamis, because they're like, they're a group. They stuck together. So, you know, they would at least associate with those who were like-minded on the same level. Then again, you get others. You get others who are other dutas, and they just are in their own world. I was reading, there's this book, it was available in India, it's out of print now. Bhamsidas Babaji, did any of you saw that book? Some of you saw that book? Bhamsidas Babaji? He was another duta. And he was just in another world all the time. He would carry his deities with him. He would never talk to anyone. He would talk to his deities. Someone would ask him a question, and he'd say, oh, Vamsidas thinks this to his deities. And he always talked of himself as Vamsidas. I wish I could tell you, I mean, read a couple of the accounts. They're really quite interesting. But one, which I remember the basic sort of idea of, some Sri Vaishnav sannyasis came to debate with him philosophy because they heard he's one of the big Babajis in Navadweep. So they came and there he was sitting with his deities, Ladu Gopal and Gornatai, who he never bathed or changed the clothes of. And he was just sitting there looking at his deities. So these sannyasis came in. And he sort of didn't even notice them. They started speaking to him. So they asked him, who are these deities? He said, pointed to Ladu Gopal, he said, this is a thief. Who are these other two? These are two rogues. So these sannyasis, you know, Sri Vaishnav, staunch sannyasis, I mean, very rules and regulations conscious. They thought, what is this? Oh, what is this man on about? So they went. And he was quite happy they went. One day, he came out of his little hut and said to this one devotee, did you hear what Gauranga told me? No. Gauranga told me, Vamsidas, you don't go out begging anymore. I'll supply food for you. So then, the other devotee didn't know what to say, of course, what can you say? So then Vamsidas took a stick and said, he wants to serve me? I'll break his legs. So, what can you say? So when a person is in that mood, like the avaduta mood, they're just allowing whatever comes to manifest. Then they become completely otherworldly. Yeah, completely. Gaur-Kishore would sometimes do that, but not so much, not like Vamsidas Babaji, but sometimes he would. Once he was sitting, he had a little hut, you know, I mean, literally like this, and he could lie down, so it might be 6 feet long by a meter wide and high enough for him to sit and chant in, with a little straw door or some flap or something. One man came to see him, and as soon as he saw the man coming, he closed the door. And the man asked his servant, can I have darshan of Babaji Maharaj, or like that? Servant said, I'll ask him. So he went and asked Gaur-Kishore, he said, tell him to give 2 rupees. So the man gave 2 rupees. The servant came and said, he gave the 2 rupees. So Gaur-Kishore opened the door, said, here, look. And then close the door. So, of course, we can't imitate. We can't imitate these types of devotees. Sometimes to avoid harassment, because he was known as a big renunciate, because he was. But sometimes to avoid the adulation which would sometimes come his way, he would dress himself up in fine silk cloth, very elegant, like a big businessman grihasta, and parade through the street just to put people off. And there was one time where he would, to do the same thing, he would dress up like that and go and sit on the veranda in front of a famous prostitute's house and just sit there for hours and let people see him. And when, because he was very friendly with Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktivinoda Thakur asked him, where have you been? He said, oh, I was over at that Mataji's house. So, and it said about the 6 Goswamis, Hey Rad, Hey Rajadevike Chalalite, Hey Nanda Suno, Kutar or Tucha. What were they doing? They were just running around Vrindavan, calling out, where are you, Radharani? Where are you, Lalita? Where are you, Krishna? So sometimes they were in that mood. Other times they'd sit down together and, like Rupa Goswami, write, or Jiva Goswami. He was also doing the same thing. But then he'd sit down and write, and you see, like in Tattva Sandarbha, how he writes. It's incomprehensible. Because, like, he's making all those references you saw, Agni Purana, Garuda Purana, Matsya Purana, and then this Veda and this Upanishad and Mahabharat. But he was living under a different tree every night, and he didn't have a computer. He didn't have a servant with, you know, pulling a trolley of books either. It was all there. It was all. He knew it all. So he would just refer Agni Purana, this chapter, this verse. Matsya Purana, this canto, chapter, verse. Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, just to do that with Bhagavad Gita is not easy at all. You have to really know it very well. But he was doing it with so many scriptures, So sometimes they're in that mood, but sometimes they're in this mood of, you know, like the most incredibly clear consciousness, or like organized consciousness. Very, very organized. Because prema means full consciousness. There's no obstacles to your consciousness. So they're fully conscious of everything that they need to be conscious of. Therefore, they're able to express themselves like that. We may struggle to remember a verse which we've learnt, but everything's just flowing with them because they're on that level. Anyway, I mean, it's to a large extent indescribable. But the foundation is pure devotional service. Serving Krishna, cultivating pure devotional service. So, any other comments or questions? Okay. So, good luck with your exam tomorrow. Good luck with realizing all of this. I hope you succeed. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.